So I don't know how many of you were here for the last panel. I thought, boy, how does the Austin game industry get going? I thought, well, I don't live in Austin. I visit maybe if I'm lucky for South by Southwest. But I thought it was a terrific example of how the problems in Austin are problems everywhere. And you sit through enough game design talks and it all comes down to, man, I wish somebody new would give me money. So that was a lot of fun. My name is Justin Hall. And for many years, I had a website where I wrote about my life at Lynx.net. And I was a game industry journalist for many years, which is probably why I'm here right now. I retired both from personal publishing on the web and active game journalism to go to graduate school at the University of Southern California, because now they have an interactive media design program, which includes video games and mobile phones and virtual reality, and I'm a student there. And aside from that, I also consult for a talent agency in Hollywood about video games and new media. So I'm here to talk to you today. As soon as I put up my slides, I'm here to talk to you today about problems in the video game industry, problems in the web industry, and how those two solutions to those problems may be overlapping and may in fact create an entirely new playing field, an entirely new arena for play. So I think a lot of innovation in games is happening in World of Warcraft. And I just don't have the patience to play World of Warcraft, even though I'm so honored that, you know, my laptop runs massively multiplayer games like this, cutting edge stuff. It's both this World of Warcraft and Second Life are games that I can play, you know, anywhere I have my laptop, but there's a commitment required. It launches a 3D graphical client, and I have to be in that window when that game is being played. I have to be in there fiddling with little objects and communicating and keeping up my relationships, and that commitment, I'm not prepared. When I'm on my computer and I'm online and I'm communicating, I'm not prepared for that kind of exclusive commitment to a window. So I mostly play single-player games, and I mostly play sitting on my couch on my Xbox. Single-player games, maybe some Half-Life multiplayer, Halo multiplayer, but mostly really single-player games. And 8 hours after I've sat down to kill some people on my screen, and I get up and I wade through maybe two or three beer bottles and some popcorn, and I stand up, I have this feeling of lost time, right? I mean, single-player games are great, but there's this sense that you've been playing alone and I've lost those hours. I withdrew from society and productive labors. So I often experience maybe what is a Judeo-Christian anxiety about that sort of a gaming hangover. But I think the new Xbox 360, if you can find it and afford it, they've proposed a solution to this gaming hangover, and it's in the form of these achievements. And they've set up a structure so that as you play through the game, it keeps track of what you've accomplished, right? You've accomplished in the game, and then it puts those things up there. And this is shared. You can get to see people's standings on the web. So I purposefully went through this game, Call of Duty 2, and played on the D-Day mission on Veteran, because I thought it would be very cool to have my online profile say I was a veteran of D-Day. It's an online trophy case, and it's all that sort of primping and pride. And it's social, right? Because you can see your friends and how they're plugged into this. You can surveil your friends. So this is an example from a few weeks ago. I can see my friend Kelly was playing Geometry Wars. My friend Nick was watching a movie. And my friend Senor Limon was playing Half-Life 2. So I get to see how my friends share entertainment space with me. A little bit of surveillance. And I get to compare achievements, right? I can see that this guy, Noah, is someone who's spent a lot more time playing games. He's got more points. Or maybe he's just better than me. So I can see Noah's achievements, but I can't give them. And I was looking at these Xbox 360 achievements, and they reminded me a lot of something on the web. Wikipedia's Barnstars. How many of you are familiar with Barnstars? Okay. Aside from single-player shooters, my other probably most active hobby is creating and editing pages on Wikipedia. I used to write obsessively about my life and the things I knew and cared about on my website, and I found that I could put them into Wikipedia instead. And then when I made a page about some blues artist that I loved on my website, you know, it would get stale after a couple of years and people would email me corrections. And I would say, you know, I don't have time. But on Wikipedia, at least the pages I create are vandalized. And so that gives them a sense of being refreshed. On Wikipedia, they have a Wikipedia-esque award system. These are achievements in Wikipedia. And they're given in Wikipedia style by users to other users. And so there's straightforward ones like we see here, the photographer's barn star for people who add photos, the defender of the wiki barn star, which would go on your user page if you've done a good job of fighting off, you know, aggressive vandals on Wikipedia. And then there's, you know, a little bit, anyone can create a barn star. You could go on Wikipedia right now and create a best of South by Southwest wiki editing barn star and throw it on this page to go along with it and then start slapping it on user pages. So this is a great, this is a spontaneous arising system from the wiki community, and it's a way of putting that reward and achievement and community status into ordinary World Wide Web use. So I'm going to talk now about the problems I mentioned in blogging and online life and living through your, through, you know, the media production online. I used to let's see, from about 1994 till 2005, I was very active in personal media production. I was constantly putting new stuff up about my life and digging through my affairs and, you know, kind of having experiences to write about them and things. And then I got blogging tools in 2002. They came out with software that automated how you could post online, and it would allow you to have comments and generate this readership and how people connected with you and stuff. And It's actually, I'll tell you the truth, blogging is too much work. And it's not only too much work for me, it's too much work for most everybody. And I found that I've taught a lot of people how to blog and helped a lot of people set up weblog sites. And what happens is about the same process happens to most everybody. They're a little tentative about blogging. They check out blogging. Then I push them a little bit and they have their own kind of feeling and they overshare. They say, okay, I'm going to push myself and I'm going to blog and I'm going to say this thing that I really shouldn't be saying, or I've been saving up, or I wasn't sure anybody would care. I never told anybody this before, but here it is, internet. And then what they find is readers really respond when they overshare. And then all of a sudden, they have this community. They have people who are, you know, a sense of commitment. They have a reader response. And that sense of commitment becomes a weight. And that weight makes you not want to blog anymore. And so they announce their semi-retirement, usually within 18 months after the start of their active blogging. So I think that's the natural cycle of blogging for most people, that it's just too much work to sit down and write personal essays on a regular basis. But the good thing about when you blog a lot is that you leave a trail. You know, you have all those entries. You know, blogging might be looked at, you know, if you have a regular day job, blogging could be looked at as a kind of distraction or a diversion from what you're normally doing. But it's a really productive distraction because you're making posts and maybe people are communicating. You're developing this online dialogue and so forth. And you end up with a pile of blog posts and a pile of comments. Hurrah, the piles. The piles are a sign of achievement. But there's another area of life online where piles are not a sign of achievement. And this is my albatross pile, which is my email inbox. And it's a, you know, I think there's an inverse pile positive relationship there. This is a negative achievement, is not being able to deal with your email. There are people who get far more email than I or any of us do who do a better job of managing it. But my problem is that, you know, unless I have some kind of profound personal transformation, maybe a religious conversion in the next few years, I am never going to be ahead on my email for the rest of my life. I'm going to, you know, this is 2 or 3 hours a day at least for the rest of my life. This, you know? So as a gamer, as somebody who came of age playing a lot of video games, I'm spending an enormous amount of time manipulating data on screen and I'm not getting a score. It seems a little fruitless, right? I'm not being immediately told when I'm making positive strategic moves. right? Like, I'm playing Age of Empires on the Nintendo DS, which is basically a turn-based port of the regular game, and that game gives you immediate feedback. You can see bar graphs when you're being strategically good or stupid. Well, I kind of want that for my email. And I think, fortunately, that's happening. And, you know, this is such an old idea that it's not even cool to talk about it, South by Southwest 2006, because it's so, like, 6 weeks ago. But it's the Web 2.0, I think, this idea that there's a new generation of websites that are popular and that are really firing up and changing the way people look at the web. This is sort of a slideshow of logos of the Web 2.0. It's causing a new boom. These are websites where it's really about relationships and play built into the websites, right? So one example might be MySpace or Friendster, right? Where you go online and you're actually creating relationships with people through websites. But that's not the best example of this kind of playful online life. There's this guy, Yuri Engstrom, who's really smart and really grounded. He's really one of the internet people I've met who's really grounded. And he talks about object-censored sociality online. So you've got sites like MySpace and Friendster that ask you to go online and say, replicate your social relationships using these lists of people you know, which is not really like a natural human activity. But then if you look at something like Flickr is so... I have yet to meet a person who gives Flickr a chance and doesn't come away totally enchanted, because it's so simple, right? It's upload photos, assign little keywords to them, and connect photos to other photos. And that makes people collect pictures of cats in sinks, right? And Flickr's Web 2.0, in the best way, they've got Creative Commons and they've got open APIs, so anybody can build all sorts of games and activities on top of Flickr. And so you've got all this, you've got Color Picker, you've got Mapper, you've got Faster, you've got these, there's, you know, people are building on top of this, and it's so playful. And I think, you know, I look at Flickr as the best example of the nourishing web, right? And I think it warms my heart as someone who loves games and feels that games do not get enough respect to realize that Flickr, arguably the birth of the Web 2.0, arguably the best site for the near future of the internet, to understand the near future of the internet, Flickr was born of an attempt to make a video game. So maybe some of you know this, but Ludicorp, the company that made Flickr, they're based in Vancouver, and they were Ludi as in play, Ludens. And so this is, they were making a game. They started to make a game called Game Never Ending, which was going to be a browser-based game of kind of like postmodern literary theory sharing. It was going to be a AAA, you know, boxed retail kind of a thing. But it was for people to create objects and then associate those objects with other objects, right? That doesn't sound like gaming as we think about it. It's sort of theoretical and metaphysical, maybe, and postmodern. But out of that came this idea of Flickr. So this idea of browser-based play is a little closer to ditching the 3D client and making me pay attention to Norath running through the, you know, tunnels and, you know, typing interactions. But what I really want is no client multiplayer electronic gaming. And I think that the best, and it's something built into communications and the operating system. And about a year ago, there's this an inveterate life hacker named Leonard Lin. And he got on IM and he said, "Hey, Justin, I got this hot new app for my Mac, and it's called Active Timer, and it allows me to monitor my own computer use." So this is a graph. The Random Foo is Leonard's website. He published this graph of the 19th of March in 2005. This was how Leonard was using his computer. So 37% of his time was spent in Firefox. 45% of the time was spent in Terminal. This is what you might call passive blogging, right? By publishing this, Leonard says, I'm down with the cool people of the internet who use Firefox. Leonard says, I'm a lead hacker who spends the bulk of my time using a terminal window to interface with my computer. Doesn't that mean I'm bad? I'm using some music player called Nice Player that you've never heard of. That also means I'm elite. This Leonard says a lot by publishing this, and he didn't have to write an essay. He just turned on some personal surveillance and then published it. So this idea of passive blogging, this is the same thing as Last.fm, right? So you, Last.fm is sort of a part of a collection, a plugin that you put with your iTunes, and it watches what you listen to, and it publishes it to Last.fm. So these are my overall all-time 12 most, you know, what I listen to on the computer that has that plugin plugged in and so forth. So this is, again, published passive blogging, publishing yourself. The guys who made this would this is what they would say. They would say, you know, spyware, right? That's the idea that someone malicious is illicitly going to put some application on your computer, and it's going to track your keystrokes and share them with Russian people who will spend money on your credit card, right? That's what spyware is in the popular imagination. They would call this spyware for you, or myware. This is what you call myware. It allows you to surveil yourself. So why, you know, for fun and for control and for, I think, play. So let's take a look at what that kind of play might look like with passive browsing and myware. So you've got Delicious, right? Which is Delicious is another of these tag oriented sites where you take objects and you assign little words to them, and those words find other things that are related for you. And so this site is, It's pretty low impact because you can just put a button in your browser and click it and then tag things and make them delicious. This is a site that just came out called Site Shuffle. And Site Shuffle, the idea is it takes some of that, okay, you've tagged this as a website you read, but then it arranges them in a sort of horizontal geography. So you use Site Shuffle, suppose their model is you would look at their site every day and look at all the sites that you browse and go, you know, left to right, I read the New York Times, then I read Boing Boing and blah, blah, blah across the way. And then you would get to see sites that are near the sites that you read from other people, right? So this is, you know, plenty of people have mapped the geography of the web and seen where people surf and what sites are near each other. But those visualizations haven't really been navigationable. Yes. So this leads to the question. So what if I knew my location in webland? What if I knew where I was when I was browsing the internet or communicating with people? What if I had a sense of my place in the larger game of communicating online? What if I, as I surfed, I left visual maps, trails, icons, my progress in a physical map sense, right? I mean, anybody who's played a long epic role-playing game knows that auto mapping can be a delicious addition to the experience, because you see this little, you know, it's usually made to look like fake parchment, and it's got little like thumbtacks stuck in, and you can annotate places you've been in the dungeon, and it's like, it's this elegant way to say, hey, I really have been somewhere. Now, this is, what would be great about this is, if you could take that data immersion, as you're surfing, you could see the map of the web that you're in, and it's a social map, and other people could see it too, and it would have the web as you surf it laid out geographically around you, and you would see the position of other people who were there with you. So the web as somewhere you could wander, find other people. And, you know, this kind of community play and wandering, I mean, I'm here giving this talk because this is how I want to use my computer and how I want to play. I don't want to play alone. I want to play with other people. I want to understand how many hours I spend reading weblogs every day and what that could mean. And I think this kind of play is coming through Wikipedia and through Xbox 360 and through all the Web 2.0 stuff. But okay, so let's say I'm at a game pitch and I'm presenting this to some suited people in Los Angeles, and they might say, well, Justin, this is all very interesting. What are your verbs? So I think my verbs are arrive, share data, and find friends. But so let's say it's play. You play in the space, you share what you play and what comes out of that. Through the sharing, you connect with people. With the connection to people, you start experimenting because other people can't help but poke you and make you do different things. And then through all of that, we come to understand how much time we spend with our technology, what happens when we're in that world, what happens to our time, and what are we learning?